This podcast is brought to you by Purposefully Different Productions and is proudly sponsored by Little Dish, makers of delicious fresh meals for kids that are an absolute lifesaver on busy days. I love these meals because they are different to other kids' meals out there. They include a variety of ingredients, lots of textures, and are made with little taste buds in mind. Before we get started on today's episode, here's a word from our friend Giovanna Fletcher.
At Little Dish, we've spent years perfecting delicious, healthy, fresh meals guaranteed to be eaten by kids. Except when you sprinkle cheese on top instead of letting them do it, or if the Little Dish is served on the red plate or the yellow plate or the blue plates, or when you talk over them, or when they can't wear their Ranger antlers because it's summer and they're in the loft, or on Mondays or on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and potentially even Sundays. Good luck and Godspeed. Little Dish. Healthy food kids love. Find us in the chilled aisle.
Hello and welcome back to season two of How to Feed with me, Charlotte Sterling Mead, the parenting podcast that brings you reassurance, confidence and practical advice on feeding your baby, toddler and your whole family. Joining me today is someone I really admire. He's a medical doctor, a multi-Sunday Times bestselling author and the host of The Doctor's Kitchen, a platform all about making healthy eating easy and accessible. It is the brilliant Dr. Rupi. Today, Rupi's joining me not just as a doctor, but as a new dad to chat all about his own journey with weaning. Thank you so much for being here, Rupi. So exciting. I'm going to talk to you all about weaning because I know new dad, new weaning journey.
Yeah.
But first of all, I just want to ask you about parenting.
Okay.
How have you found being a new dad, basically?
Okay. So first of all, thanks so much for inviting me on. I feel very privileged to be here. Parenting, I'm going to give you the honest answer, okay? Mm-hmm. I was never a broody person before Raphael, who's got the same name as your son.
My Raphael.
Was born and we were deciding to have kids. And it was very much a, it's very unfashionable to say this, but like it was very much a rational decision to have a child in the first place. It was almost like a decision tree. Me and my wife, Rochelle, we were like, do we want kids? Yes. Biologically, do we need to have kids soon? Yes, because like I'm 40 this year, Rochelle's coming up to the same age. Ergo, we should start trying.
Yeah.
And we were lucky in that we have very healthy lifestyles and luck of the draw, we got pregnant very, very quickly. Okay. Rochelle got pregnant very, very quickly. And I think because of that lack of broodiness and how quickly Raphael...
Yeah, it all happened.
Exactly, it all happened very, very quickly. So I think it's taken me a while to love being a father. Yeah. And I would say the first few months for me, developing a connection with Raphael was a bit of a struggle. Mm-hmm. And it felt more like a responsibility that I was privileged and obviously blessed to have.
Yeah,
and, you know, all those things, super, super important. But it did take me a while for it to become like second nature. Like, you know, I love this bundle of joy and all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't until a few months that I was like, oh my God, I'm just like, I'm ecstatic. And obviously there are moments, you know, up and down where it's just like, this is the most irritating thing ever. Like, what have I done with my life? And like, is this actually the right decision? Or is this like a socially like, you know, responsible thing to, or like, you know, just the social pressure of actually being, having a kid. But now I love it. But it's bit like ups and downs, like huge ups and downs, particularly in the first few months.
But I wonder as well, because I think a lot of parents per se, but definitely dads say that anyway, even if they had wanted it.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely think my husband would say the same thing. He didn't necessarily have that like instant, okay, I've got this straight away. And I feel like, I don't know, but maybe with dads, it is a bit more of a grow to love them because especially in the first instance, the mum is obviously largely like breastfeeding, just given birth. There's a lot of like skin to skin and needing them around. So I feel like that is really common. My brother, he's 40. He's just had his first baby.
Yeah.
And he was honestly messaging us saying the same thing. Like, I don't think I'm normal.
Yeah.
And I actually think many people think that, but just don't talk about it.
Yeah,
much.
I know. And that's I'm really, really happy to hear that. And I think more men need to be a bit more honest with their opinions because I think, you know, it's very easy for me to be like, oh my God, it's amazing. You know, it's like incredible journey and like this connection I have with them, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But honestly, it was a struggle, particularly at the start. And I think I'm anticipating more struggles down the road, you know, around 2-3 years old, and everything comes with its own challenges. But like, I think also it's a really exciting opportunity for me to practice a lot of the things that I've been talking about for years, gratitude, reframing, growth mindset, like all these things that are going to be obviously great for me as an individual that I actually get to like practice with this thing. And I keep on calling it the thing, but like, you know, this thing that's going to grow with me and it's going to be with me hopefully for the rest of my life.
Oh my God, I love it. But also it is that, so it's almost, do you feel like it's almost forced you into like looking after you and addressing your inner whatever's, you know, because I kind of feel like that as well. Like I remember when my son was young and I thought, oh my God, I need to get my anxiety sorted out so I'm not passing it on, even though it doesn't really work. But but no, I feel like it does make you address some of your own things and you're like, I need to get myself sorted out.
Definitely. Absolutely. And look, I'm obviously someone who has had this experience from a very young age. Like when I got ill, age 24, I had this sort of like very stark experience where if I wasn't looking after myself, then I was suffering with my illness, my cardiovascular problem. And so I've learned from a very young age that I need to look after myself. My threshold for illness is a lot lower than my colleagues. And now maybe it's a blend of being a dad and also hitting 40, but like I'm even more invested in looking after myself to be the best I can for Raphael and my family and my wife. And that has now made me reframe things like longevity, the types of exercise that I do, the investigations that I choose to pay extra for to ensure that my heart and my brain is going to be as active as possible. You know, instead of me thinking about gymming and diet from the lens of aesthetics, which has never really been my thing, it's even more so about functionality and how to live my healthiest life so I can be around and be as present as possible for this thing.
Your thing.
In the future.
And do you feel, does that have an impact on also how you parent him? Like what you think about his health, his growth, his life? So is that also impacting that? Because that's really fascinating for me is, you know, you've got such a huge wealth of knowledge and you obviously really care and you do take care of yourself. So how does that play out with how you raise Raphael?
Definitely. You know, it's a, we've been talking about this a lot, me and Rochelle. It's like, there's a real balance to be struck here because it's very easy for us to be uber healthy and actually instill what could be a negative behavior in that, like restricting him from having any like things like sugar or any enjoyment or any dessert. But there's a real balance here where we want him to enjoy those things and appreciate things that we had when we were kids, but not to the extent where it could potentially be harmful for his health in the future. But I mean, with the fact that me and Rochelle's really into food as well, like Italian background, grew up in Australia, like in Sydney, healthy lifestyle, all that kind of stuff, loves working out. Like we're that annoying couple that like, you know,
the one that doesn't get invited to dinner.
Like we, you know, we go running in the morning and all that kind of stuff.
Gosh,
we have like, you know, kale smoothies and all that kind of jazz.
I love it.
And, you know, Aussie breakfast. So he's naturally going to be having that diet. He's going to be eating a diverse array of food and he's going to enjoy like the bitter notes as well as the sweet notes in a variety of different cultures like Indian food, Australian food, Italian food. So he's naturally going to be like that anyway. But absolutely, I'm thinking about, okay, healthy fats for his brain, ensuring that his immune cells are going to be like, you know, we've got a little dog as well, but also ensuring that his microbes are going to be fed with a variety of different fibers, like all those things, almost like second nature in the back of my mind, he's going to be benefiting from.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's so funny because you can't switch that off either. I think you know, once you've done nutrition and you've learned about health, you can't switch it off. And I find it really hard. Like sometimes my husband will make breakfast and he won't put any fruit or veg with it. And I'm like, like, it's so simple.
It's like a reflex.
It's a reflex. Yeah. And I can't bear it. And if I come into the kitchen and he served breakfast and it's just, I don't know, something plain like toast with topping, I'm like, well, you have to have a piece of fruit. I can't cope. So I'll get the frozen fruit out, or but even a bit of carrot. Right? Like my kids will literally munch some carrot with breakfast, but I can't do it. You're always thinking about it, aren't you?
Always, yeah. And you know, we naturally, like when we're at a restaurant outside, I'm always ordering greens. Even if there's no greens on the menu, I'm like, do you have any bit like broccoli there?
Exactly.
Like, so there's some rocket leaves. Yeah. So like whenever, and the weaning plate is actually quite interesting because it's already got those sections, right? Mm-hmm. The ones that we have at home. Mm. So for us, it's always like the primer, like, oh yeah, some veg there, maybe a bit of fruit there, you know, his main protein there, bit of carb on the side. Like it kind of becomes normal.
Yeah.
And because we basically cook everything from scratch for him, like it's just like the norm. So he's very much eating the same kind of stuff that we've developed this thing. I don't know if we can get into it now, we've developed this thing like where if we're making, let's say, a bolognese, we'll just make that without any salt, without any of the extra additives, nothing too chilly. Mm-hmm. So we'll make it super plain, portion that out, and then we make our own.
Yeah.
Like, so it's just like, it just becomes second nature. Yeah. So we've got the freezer section for him that we've got like all the stuff that we've made from scratch. And then we just add extra stuff on the side for us.
Yeah.
So it just works for our like family of three.
And honestly, he will benefit so much from that. Like I don't think a lot of people realize, but you know, for me, that's one of the biggest things is eating the same food as you.
Yeah.
He will already be exposed to such a wide variety that even if he goes through inevitable fussy phases or food refusal phases, that will still be his norm.
Yeah.
You know, it really will. So I love that. And obviously you've just gone through weaning.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I wanted to, how did that work? I mean, you kind of touched on it a bit, but how did you find weaning? Because he's 8 months now, right?
Yeah, he's about to turn 8 months.
Okay.
And like, obviously, we chatted on my podcast, which is great
just
timing.
Just as you were going in.
Yeah, and I read your book cover to cover. And actually, my team members who also had kids last year, they were like raving about your book as well.
Like,
I already had like the cliff notes from loads of other folks. But, you know, following your plan was just super simple because like, I agree with everything you said, as we talked about on the podcast.
Yeah.
Like the bitter notes, get them eating broccoli as the first thing he had, basically.
Yeah.
And then we went through all the different colors of the vegetables. And then like, you know, we started playing around with fruit and all the rest of it. So even though he's had like other carbs and like sort of like more like, you know, corn-based or oat-based foods later on, like he started off with those greens.
Yeah.
And so he, like broccoli is still his favorite thing. It's amazing.
Love it.
Like it's been great. So for us, honestly, it's been a really exciting journey. Also being, you know, a GP and like A&E experience and acute medicine, all the rest of it, when he's gagging, and like, you know, choking on some of those, it's less stressful for me.
Yeah.
But loads of people have messaged me when like, you know, how do you deal with the choking animal? How do you deal with like the gag? How do you know when like, you know, it's something serious or something you can just let him? And obviously for Rochelle, who's non-medical, that was a bit anxiety provoking for her as well. And I can see it on her face. And you know, when it's your own child and you know, it's there, like it does get you a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Because I feel like it's a bit of a different experience learning it to living it for
sure. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think that choking, I mean, parents are really scared about allergies and choking.
Totally.
It's the biggest thing. Mm. What do you say back to parents when they say to you that they're worried about choking? And also it's so lovely to hear that you feel confident with it because it's very rare.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
your
experience.
So. Yeah, I think, you know what? It's interesting because I think we talked about it on the podcast where you almost have to get used to them developing that reflex to cough when something goes to the back of their throat.
Exactly, it's protective.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, you know, having had that NCT experience where Rochelle learned basic life support for babies and all that kind of stuff, it was a lot more confidence building.
Exactly.
So you know what to do if, you know, that would ever happen. Mm-hmm. And thankfully it is rare.
Yeah.
And I think it's just getting like used to like them having to cough, because I mean pretty much like every week he'll have like a coughing episode, but he's like, and then it just comes up.
Yeah.
So you just, it's part of that natural process.
Yeah, for sure. And it is really scary, isn't it? Especially the first few times, but I think you do have to let them learn to eat.
Totally.
Actually, it's kind of throwing out slightly. Did you do the kind of finger foods and purees alongside? And did you prefer one or the other? Or did Raph prefer one or the other? How did you?
Really interesting. So we did a blend of both.
Okay.
So sometimes we get pureed and sometimes he was just like grabbing it and just like chewing chewing on the end mm-hmm. of it, you know, with mm-hmm. his gums yeah. or whatever. And he started quite early, like around 5 months.
Yeah.
So, and I remember, because we were having a conversation about, you know, if he feels ready for it, if he's getting a bit hungry or he's showing signs that he is a bit hungry, just start it like very, very small. And we did. And he was like, he loved it from day one. He was just so intrigued and just like watching his face light up as he tried different things
flavors.
Was incredible. Yeah. And so it was a real blend of like him grabbing stuff and then us feeding him. Yeah. He went through a phase of like 2 weeks, I think. He must have been like 6.5, 7 months, where he wouldn't let anyone else feed him.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
He would literally really be like, normal. No, I'm not using the spoon. I'm grabbing something.
Yeah.
And so we had to think like, okay, what foods can we give him that he can grab that's actually going to give him a bit himself, of protein and all the rest of it? So I started making these like, this is a little bit later on in his weaning journey, these like koftas made with chickpeas, chicken mints, some flavors, mild flavors, blended up together with an egg. We'd test them with egg by this point with the allergens. And then I just shaped them and baked them. Mm-hmm. And so they were perfect to grab with these little chubby fingers.
Palmer grasped,
and just like nod on the end. And it was like, it was super cute.
Yeah.
But it also gave us the confidence that he was eating enough because otherwise, like, you know, they get irritable after like 15, 20 minutes and then like he's done and then, you know, he hasn't eaten.
And a lot's gone on the floor. A lot's gone on them.
So much on
a lot
the floor.
Of people get really stressed with the baby led and the kind of finger foods because so much gets on the floor and I don't think they've eaten anything. But actually that is such an important part of them self-feeding and learning to actually take food, bite it. But does he take food, like, does he spoon feed now though?
Yeah, he spoon feeds now. Like I would, you know, just give him like some puree and he would just like gnaw the end of it.
Yeah.
So during the first 5 to 10 minutes, he's great with a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of that 5-10 minutes, then he's like having enough. Then he's like, no, I'm feeding myself.
Yeah.
He can't coordinate the spoon. So you're just like watching and he's grabbing the spoon and he's like, and it's going in his mouth, going and then into the eye.
In the eye,
and then into the hair.
And then
you've got all this food and you're like, I just spent so long making this food.
Yes.
And it's just going all over the place. So there's that massive frustration. And we have these things, like we put it underneath the high chair because we've got carpet.
Oh, yeah.
And our,
I know the ones, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a lifesaver, honestly. Yeah. And that we're just going through all this like kitchen towel and stuff. So the first couple of times you did it, I remember just thinking myself, we're going to like bankrupt ourselves going through all these towels. The food's going everywhere.
Yeah, he's like, not eating anything.
He's not eating anything. The dog's like sniffing around and she's going to pick up something and she's got intolerances and she can't eat everything.
Yeah,
so there's all these things going on at the same time. But now it's like a military operation with me and Rochelle. It's literally like, feeding time, clean down, make sure that these aren't anywhere near. The dog's in the other room. Clean down afterwards and then like repeat the process. Mm. And we almost like do a weekly menu at the start of the week as well.
Okay.
You can tell like with the annoying sort of
you're organized
people.
As well.
Very, very organized. So we just like, you know, just portion everything out during the week. And so it just gives us the confidence that he's getting enough. Even if half the stuff goes in the floor, he's still on like, you know, milk and stuff. So
He's getting his milk. And I think people do really worry about how much they're eating.
Yeah.
But actually kids are really intuitive as well.
Totally.
Do you kind of allow him to lead? Like, because that's what I often say, like, put them there, give them the food. Like, no one can force them to eat, so allow them. But a lot of parents really struggle with that because they feel like this need to get them to eat, you know?
Yeah. I think, like, certainly from Rochelle's side, there was definitely that initial worry that he wasn't consuming enough. And, like, look, she's Italian, so she's an Italian mother, and so she's got
a
need to feed, and they're like, I'm Indian, and so you know, it's the worst combination for Rafael, because like, you've got these two parents that just want to feed you as much as possible. So we've definitely come over that, and we allow him to, and you know what, he's a really good eater when you allow him to eat the finger foods that he can actually coordinate
in
and put into
way.
His mouth.
Yeah.
So the stem of broccoli or the patty or the fritter that we've made out of lentils, and you know, there's good amounts of protein and fiber in that. The pear, you know, that we've taken the skin off and stuff. Sometimes that like, he's grabbing it and it's a mushy like pear or whatever and it just mushes into his hand and then there's nothing going in or whatever. So we've kind of like got used to the ripeness of the ingredient, what works for him. But yeah, no, that was, it's always been a, and the allergen, you mentioned allergens. So we went through that process of introducing those core allergens. Oh, I spoke to Dr. Helen recently.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
she said
she wrote in your book as well, didn't she?
She's really great. Yes.
So good.
She spoke to me before she went on yours. Was it good?
Yeah, it was amazing. It? She's just great. Like exactly like you said. So, you know, I think part of her role as well is like giving parents the confidence to give allergens to to kids as well. And like for us, completely. It was like, you know, okay, let's go through them step by step.
Yep.
This is what the evidence says. We should be introducing these allergens that are common in the UK early. They're different from country to country, but the ones in the UK, we want to make sure that we're getting in eggs and all the rest of it. And so we just did that in a very stepwise process. Yeah. And doing it in that manner just gave us the confidence that, okay, we're training his immune system.
Yeah.
We're on the right track.
Exactly.
There's nothing to worry about. And even if there was anything to worry about, maybe because of my, you know, background being a medic, there's, you know, the stepwise thing that you can do. Mm. Like we followed your book.
I love it. And do you feel like as a GP doing this, obviously a lot, you know, it's great that you kind of agree with like the veg-led weaning and the baby-led and the, you know what I mean? Everything you're so up to date on. So do you feel like you might have handled it completely differently if you weren't a doctor? And also with your wife, was there anything that you think would have been different, or did you have any different opinions about how to start?
Honestly, I felt like a complete fraud because like it was a real awakening, particularly when he had his first episode of bronchiolitis. And like, you know, his he was like 8 weeks I think at the time, so it's a tiny little thing, and you know, he's wheezing away and he's obviously distressed and all the rest of it. I can so understand even more so and empathize so much more with the parents that would come in at like 2-3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And even baby's fine, you know, breathing fine, feeding well, passing water, all the rest of it. Like you can understand why people completely. Come in all the time, just out of that pure anxiety. So Rochelle was super lucky to have me there. But when it came to like food and feeding and all that kind of stuff, I felt like I was completely out of my depth.
Really?
Yeah. Even
just
as a GP.
It's so different.
So different. You can't imagine what it's like. It's just the stuff that we were just talking about earlier. The frustration of food going everywhere. Yeah. The worry that they're not consuming enough.
The worry about allergens, the worry about choking.
All that
so
stuff.
Much.
Growth milestones, development point, all that kind of stuff. Like, I know the basics. Yeah. I know what should be happening relative to, like, you know, age and all the rest of it. But unless you're in the trenches doing it, you don't know.
Yeah,
you really don't know. So my experience whilst on the surface is like, I kind of get it. Doing it is a very, very different thing. And so I think I was as out of depth as your average parent.
Really, that's so interesting. Even as a doctor.
Even as a doctor.
And a foodie. And, you know, that's so reassuring for people to hear this genuinely. Like, I think they will love that because you do feel like everyone else has got it.
Yeah, I know, totally.
Especially with like social media and seeing everybody else's babies feeding and weaning.
Totally.
So I think that's so, it will be so refreshing.
I remember chatting
to
my other GP colleagues about it as well that had kids.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, yeah, same. Absolutely. Yeah. Like very, very
so
different.
Crazy.
And like compared to a lot of my friends, I'm having my kids relatively late. So, you know, they've gone through it, but like they remember like, oh yeah, like I'm a GP and I'm talking to parents about their kid and stuff. And like, we're sort of, I don't want to say we're winging it, but like, you know, we know the basics. We know what should be happening.
Yeah.
But when you're actually doing it, very, very different experience. And you have so much worry and like unease and like whether you're doing the right thing. Like it's the same. It's the same for medics.
Exactly.
Yeah, it really is.
And I genuinely love your honesty with that. I think that would be so, so helpful. So is there anything that obviously it sounds like everything has gone pretty well. Like you've kind of gone through it and been like, this is really tricky, but we're going to figure this out, figure the next pick out, figure the next, basically like a lot of other parents will be doing it on the job.
But is
there anything that hasn't panned out? Is there anything that you're like, oh my gosh, that didn't work? I mean, I guess a bit like the spoon feeding for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Was there anything that you were like, oh, that really wasn't how I thought it would go?
I mean, I thought he would take to fruit a lot better, but like there was this really interesting, like we gave him some mashed up raspberries.
Yeah.
And they were sweet to us, but like to him, it was like we just gave him lemon. And he was just like, you know, like really not enjoying
really,
that at all.
So
really didn't enjoy it. I don't know what was wrong with that. I think there were certainly moments where he just refuses to eat. And there is a bit of worry there, particularly amongst with my wife when he hasn't eaten or missed a meal. Yeah. And like, I'm a lot more relaxed about that, but I understand from her perspective that if he misses a meal, you're like, oh, like there's something wrong or, you know, he hasn't consumed enough. Like, we're the kind of parents that will measure, like, you know, the mils of milk that he's consumed to the, like,
to the tea. Milliliter. Yeah, I remember talking about this on your pod.
And even though we know it's like, you know, up and down, and like you don't drink exactly the same amount of water every single day, when it comes to like your baby who's less than a year old, you do what you just want to know. You just want to know. So I think we're probably like relaxing that a bit in the same way we're relaxing like his timings and like, you know, sleep schedule and that kind of stuff. I would say it's hard, Charlotte, because like we just really enjoyed it overall.
I love that.
Like
that's
it's really fun for us because we're genuinely foodies. So for me to like create pancakes with like oats and like banana and you know, and adding hemp seeds and a bit of flax and stuff, and like just adding these little touches to his diet, it's been so fun. But I can imagine for folks who aren't used to cooking themselves,
big difference,
or having to use like ready-made products or pouches, particularly with, you know, the stuff that we've heard on the news recently, you can understand the worry or the guilt that you would feel from that. But luckily we're pretty relaxed in that, in that sense. And, you know, it's a privilege for us that we're able to afford like a good variety of food that's never been a blocker for us. I just want to like, you know, acknowledge that like for us, the fact that we can go to a supermarket and not really have to think about, okay, we can't have that. We need to budget for this. Or we have multiple other mouths to feed. We don't have that, that extra worry. And so we can just afford to have fun. And like we've really been like just leaning to have fun, like using your recipes, doing twists on them, like all that kind of stuff. Like it's fun for us.
And if it's not eaten, like, you know, if the food's thrown on the floor, it's not like that was the only meal
I've
got.
Honest, I do actually like eat his food.
I do,
you know, if he's not eating, I'm like
Well, I love the fact that you're adapting those meals, that your meals, because I, honestly, it makes such a big difference.
And it does,
I think that's what a lot of parents don't have the confidence to do, because maybe they're not confident with food, or maybe that's not the kind of things that they're eating, or what babies should necessarily be eating. And obviously that's when you do end up getting that like over reliance on you know, over reliance on pouches, or because you're thinking, well, if I don't give them this, I'm going to be making something. They might not eat it, ends up on the floor, it's wasted money, a whole meal gone. And I think that idea of babies needing to kind of like eat every meal as well, exactly like you said, that is so hard to get away from. And I think, you know, we don't have the same appetite. Like you said, we're drinking, we don't have the same appetite every day. And also babies' appetites are so much more variable than us, because if they're growing, if they've got a tummy ache, if, you know, they cannot articulate these things to us. So, you know, if they miss a meal, it's not the end of the world. But from a parent's perspective, we're like, oh my gosh, they're missing a whole massive amount of calories.
And it's this nuance, right, that you won't understand even as a medic unless you've actually been a parent. Because I just see, through my experience being a doctor for over 15 years, I only see like the extreme or the acute nature when you do have a kid with a tummy ache, and then you examine them and you look for signs and you distract them and do all the normal things. But like the day-to-day where they might have like a little bit of a tummy ache, a little bit of a headache, a little bit off their food, that's the kind of thing you're like, is there something wrong? What's going on?
Google.
Exactly. And you Google, and then you go into it, and then you speak to other friends, and then you like you go into like a forum, a parents forum, or whatever. So there's so much to this that I am new to, and I don't want to pretend to, even to myself, that like I know everything, because I absolutely don't. And it's like, it's just a new experience. Every week to week, it feels like
completely.
It's new. Particularly at this point where he's like growing so
changing
much.
Changing a lot as well.
Changing loads and
And do you feel that all of these little experiences are going to influence your thoughts on like, well, your advice to parents, your thoughts on like child development, nutrition? Like, has it completely changed the way that you maybe, like you said, if you were to work in A&E and someone coming, how would you feel like that's changed your opinion on child development?
So I don't practice in the NHS anymore. So I'm not clinical. So, but if I was, absolutely. Yeah. Like it would completely change. If I think back to some of the conversations that I've had with parents over the years, I kind of cringe at perhaps maybe the lack of empathy that I may have had for different people's scenarios, and in all honesty. And I think, you know, being super honest and vulnerable here, like I definitely would have changed my thinking and approach to some of those consultations for sure. So if I was still clinical in hospitals and general practice, then absolutely, yeah, I would. It would very much change the type of medicine that I'd be practicing. But yeah, even conversations that I have with folks online and you know, the education that we do, like we're not pediatric and we don't do kids nutrition. We're like adult focused. But you know, when I get the odd question here and then, like absolutely, I mean, usually just revert to folks like you. But yeah, it's it would be very different.
I love that because it is so different when you become a parent. And I think one thing I really wanted to tap into a little bit is about your role, like being a dad, because obviously a lot of, you know, and I know this is stereotyping, but a lot of the weaning will be done by a mother generally. And the question I wanted to ask you on this was, first of all, how have you found that balance? And second of all, what would your, like, I guess, advice be to dads to get them more involved? Because I think a lot of the feeding does come down to mum, because maybe they're breastfeeding or maybe they just automatically taken on the feed, the formula feeding role or whatever. But yeah, how have you kind of juggled that? Because you also work and you work really long hours as well. So how have you juggled that and being involved in the weaning? And yeah, the tips for parents or at dads to do the same.
Totally, yeah. So I think part of the enjoyment of what we, what me and Rochelle like at the moment is the efficiency that we bring to our cooking week. So at the weekends when I'm definitely present, we're like batching quite a bit. So I remember I made these oat pancakes. I think they were in your book, actually. I can't remember. But
you tagged me in them.
So I made a stack of those. And then like we would like keep some in the fridge and then keep some in the freezer. So that way, even if I miss the morning breakfast, like I still feel like I've been part of it. And it makes it so much easier for Rochelle that like she can just whack these in the toaster or warm them up in the pan or whatever. And then like, you know, they're good to go. So I kind of feel like I'm part of that winning journey. And also it enables us to be a lot more efficient with our cooking over the week as well. So that's like part of it.
Yeah.
I do try and rush home as quickly as possible to get back for evening dinner and bath time. So I feel like I'm part of that. But I think it's where I'm able to be as helpful as possible, like during the times when I'm I'm actually there. So I can actually be kind of present when I'm not there physically. And I think the other thing that we've benefited from is a sort of hybrid approach to feeding overall. So Rochelle was breastfeeding partly, but then we also bottle fed as well. We did baby-led weaning, but then we also did some spoon feeding and all the rest of it. So having this sort of like balance of the two has enabled us to be as flexible as possible.
Yeah, I was going to say flexibility sounds like it's really, really worked for you.
Really has. And so, you know, it's enabled Rochelle to be as present as she wants to be, especially when it comes to breastfeeding. But like this weekend, she's off for the first time, you know, on a mum's holiday. I can take over everything from like the long weekend from Friday to Monday. So I'm going to be around and I'm going to be doing all the feeding and stuff. So it's those moments where I like, A, get an appreciation for just how much work this is whilst Rochelle's on mat leave. And B, you know, I get to be as present as possible.
And why is it so important to you to have been really present? Like, what, like, why does that matter? Because I'm sure there are so many dads who feel exactly the same and maybe don't feel like they're able to. Like, I love, honestly, I think it's so important because they're so, and I know everyone says it and it's really boring, but they are only young ones. And all of these little things you're going through, like the weaning milestone, the breastfeeding, it's all so short-lived in the scheme of things.
Totally, So, I mean, for me, maybe it's because I'm just such a food lover, or maybe this is just something that everyone loves to watch. But like his little face when he reacts to certain things gives me so much joy. And maybe it's because, you know, like I'm a food recipe creator, you know, I do this for the love of feeding people not only healthy food but delicious food. It's just watching his reaction when he reacts to like those chicken koftas that I made him or like these beef pre-lentil kebabs, or you know, even just like we do this thing with when we're like struggling with greens, we'll just put some spinach in the pan, wilt it right down, and I'll mash it, and then I'll just spoon feed him that. Like, he loves that.
He loves it, yeah.
I mean, it's just bitter greens, yeah. But he loves it. Those little moments where he's just like, where he sees the spoon in front of him and he goes for it, or like he sees something on a plate and he goes for it and he puts it in his mouth and he just munches on it and you're just there and you... There's no phone.
Yeah.
There's no like any distraction for me. Like that for me is like a form
like
of meditation.
It's connection over food.
Yeah.
And I think that's such an, you know, that's so lost in a lot of senses and with a lot of situations. I do feel like that's so lost. You know, that whole like Mediterranean where everyone stops for lunch and they eat together.
Totally.
You know, how often do we eat together? Because it is just, it's so rare these days. And I think connecting over food, like I think it's conviviality or commensality, one of the two. But it's so vital. And kids learn it, you know, he will learn and he will be picking up on all those moments where you're eating together and you're sharing a joyed time over food. And it really does matter.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Oh, I love it.
I mean, like some of my favorite moments, even my own family when I was younger, was literally around the table.
Food.
You know, and like, you know, growing up in an Indian household, we'd have like a stack of paratha or roti or chapati, whatever it might be. And then like a big pot of like saag and then like side of pickles and stuff. And then we'd have butter mucken on the side that you'd like lather over there. And it would just be sat there just eating away. There's no TV, obviously no phones back then. Like those are the moments that I want to remember and also like replicate for him. So even pre-Raphael, it's like pre-Raphael and post-Raphael, but for me and Rochelle, we'd always have protected meal times and we'd sit on a table, no phones, no TV. And then we'd just like ask each other how each other's day has gone, like talk through everything. We've always done that. And I think that's really important because a lot of my friends, and no judgment, I get it, but like you have your phones there and you're eating away and you're like scrolling at the same time. And I it's kind of shocking to me how common that is. And I understand why, and you know, people are busy or they just want distraction or they want to numb the busyness of their day with just entertainment. But I think the process of slowing right down and enjoying one other's presence, if you're lucky enough to have someone like that in your in your life, is so, so important. And I recently did a silent retreat.
I
did this a couple of months ago now. Again, very, very lucky to be able to do it, particularly as, you know, he was like 6 months at the time. And I think almost that might have been the turning point for me in my appreciation for being a dad even more so. So on the silent retreat, that I'm banging on about to everyone at the moment
because
I'm just like, I'm boring my team.
I'm not sure I'd have been able to do it, but anyway.
So it's literally like no talking, no writing, no listening, no reading. You're not meant to be having any conversation with anyone. So we did like yin yoga, which is like a very relaxing, slow moving yoga. It was up in the Lake District, very, very simple, sort of like a dorm style rooms, like your own room, whatever. But it was like very, very low stimulation.
Yeah.
That was the whole purpose of the silent retreat. I didn't really feel much when I was there, but when I came back, I lost this reflex to like grab my phone and check my email.
Even after just a few days.
Even after a few days. I lost this sort of like nagging FOMO of like, oh, I'm going to check social media. I'm going to check in the post that I've just done. I've got to check in. I lost that. And actually what I realized that I was doing, and I hate to admit this, but sometimes like when I was feeding Raphael when he was younger, I'd be feeding him and I'd be like, I'm going to check this email. I'm going to do that. And I cringe when I think back to that because I now know how damaging that was, not for him, but for me.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't doing exactly what you were saying earlier. Appreciating those moments that are gone. Like they're fleeting. You only have those moments for a certain amount of time. And now when I get to play with him, I've reframed it using perhaps a growth mindset, whatever, or maybe it was the experience from my silent retreat. That like, this is my meditation. This is my presence. I don't need to sit cross-legged in silence and like, you know, do a body scan. I can literally just play with my kid or watch him or feed him.
And
this is my meditation.
Joy.
It's so joyful. And when you tap into it, and it probably takes a little bit of getting used to it at the start, but if you reframe that, it's magical. It is absolutely game changing.
And do you feel like so that what you did has been long lasting? Because sometimes I think these things can help.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to slip back into like old norms, or you know, like I said, we went on holiday and we got back, and then within a day I was like, whoa,
yeah.
My brain's gone straight back into da 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 da.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's really hard, isn't it, to keep that? But it
absolutely.
Sounds like you have.
Yeah, because I think it comes down to how you frame it. So you know, Dr. Julie, who's great, she's coming on the pod in a couple of weeks. She explains it really well. It's like if you have to remove yourself physically from a situation to get some relief from it, and you can't live in a stressful scenario, that's not the way to do it. That's not the process. That's actually not progress. Progress is when you're in that situation and you allow the stress to just come off your, like, you know, just wash over you. And you're not affected from it. So what the Sonic Retreat did for me is, yes, it was an extreme physical removal of me from stressful scenarios and overstimulation, but bringing that presence that I had during that retreat into what is a very noisy world, that's where you get the progress. And sometimes I think you need to unplug to be able to get that like realization and actually like, I can sit there and he's like, you know, throwing his food around and stuff. And like, you know, he's not eating and stuff. And I can just be like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
You know?
I love it. It's so, so
it's
like,
hard
to do.
It's hard to do that. It's easier said than done. Yeah. But like, I can truly say now, like, oh yeah, no, that's
do,
kind of
you
fun.
Do it.
Yeah.
Oh, it must be such a great tool once you've kind of achieved it. But I do think it's hard because it's all to do with context, isn't it? Like what's happened in your day? What's your mind doing?
Totally.
What are you worried? You know, what's your worries right now?
Totally.
And it's so, you know, I've been trying for the last maybe like year or so to really be like, when I'm with the kids, I have to shut off everything else. But it's so hard because, I mean, my brain ticks all the time. I'm always thinking of like, oh, I haven't done that. I haven't done that. Oh, got to do that.
Yeah,
and that's what's hard to shut off when you're with the kids. But I love that idea of I get to be here. Like, I get to play this.
Yeah.
I get to feed these guys.
Yeah, exactly. And so Rochelle's very similar to you in that, like, she's constantly worrying. She's constantly stimulating. And to be fair to her, like, you know, she's doing a lot of the work and the brunt. And I might be sat here and be like, I just get to feed him and I don't have to worry about all the other things as well. So maybe that's just a bit of my, like, lack of realization of just how much goes into it. But
it's still a tool. It's still an incredible tool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of rubbed off onto her, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Like these moments that we get to share, like, you know, even vocally as well. Like, you know, this is what he's doing is kind of annoying right now. But like in a couple of months or maybe a couple of years, like we'll think back to and like, oh, this is actually fun. I heard in this podcast recently, there's like two different types of fun. There's type one fun and type two fun. Type one fun is like when it's actually fun in the moment, like when you're on a roller coaster and it's And type two fun is like when it's really painful in the moment,
at
but
the
you
time.
Look back on it, you're like, oh, that was really fun.
Was
like
funny.
Building a business, like what we're doing right now is like, it's really painful. It's really, really draining. Like working 1 hour, but then hopefully in a couple of years' time, we look back and be like, oh, that was the best moment of my life.
Great
it was like,
that?
Great.
Yeah,
we were sleeping on the floor and building tech.
And as a parent, you do that so much, don't you? Because, you know, you look at pictures and I remember in the moment being like, this is so hard.
Yeah.
And then you look at pictures and like, oh my God, I loved it when they were like that.
yeah. Like when he was like tiny, like I just hold him in one hand.
And you had no idea what you were doing.
100%.
And you were probably all over the place, but you're like, oh.
Totally.
How cute was that moment?
Totally, yeah. And even like going back to me being a doctor, like I would only be holding babies that size for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have to go back with the kid. I wouldn't have to like tend to him, swaddle him and do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you think back to even swaddling, we're like, I don't know, doing the swaddling, like how bad I was at that and stuff. And, you know, waking up every 3 hours.
Yeah.
And now you look back and you're like, oh, that was pretty fun.
That was fun, yeah.
But it wasn't fun at the time. It was not fun.
Oh, do you know what? I actually think that is so true. I reckon most of my fun is that.
Yes,
that is like
exactly.
90%.
Type 2 fun.
Exactly. I'll try and lock into that. Obviously fueling us as parents. So you talk about healthy eating. You're all about healthy recipes for adults.
Yeah.
Any tips, any advice, any great meals, or, you know, I love what you've been talking about, your menu planning and your batch cooking, because I think as a parent, it's so essential. But what tips have you got for parents who are like new and who are really struggling with feeding themselves healthy food? Because there's going to be a lot, let's be honest.
It's a really, really good question. So I think like overall, over the last few years, I've like overcomplicated healthy eating and I've gone through all these different like sort of things that you need to be doing, like, you know, chrononutrition and micronutrients and phytochemicals and all these different colorful plants. There's three questions you need to ask yourself every time you sit down to eat. am I getting enough protein in this meal? Mm-hmm. Are there gut-friendly ingredients? Mm-hmm. And is this going to be pro-anti-inflammatory overall? Mm-hmm. And so you want to ensure that you're fueling yourself particularly well in the mornings, because mm-hmm. breakfast, for me, this is my sort of bias. Mm-hmm. If you have a refined sugary breakfast that puts you on a bit of a sugar roller coaster, it's low in protein, it doesn't give you enough fiber, mm-hmm. you're going to feel really wide. You're going to feel like you're craving food for mm-hmm. the rest of the day because you haven't met the threshold for protein in particular that will keep you satiated. So for me, the most important meal is actually having a really good breakfast. Mm-hmm. What I do is I actually make something called Doctor's Kitchen bread, which is like nuts, seeds.
Yeah, I've seen your bread. Yeah. Looks amazing.
And honestly, it takes less than 10 minutes to make and the weekend. You bake it for 60 minutes. I slice it and I freeze it mm-hmm. and I literally had it this morning mm-hmm. and that way I can just toast it straight mm-hmm. from frozen mm-hmm. and I could just put some peanut butter on it. I can put an egg on it. I can do a little scramble. I can add some tofu slices,
avocado,
a bit of sauerkraut, avocado, whatever you got. And I know that's going to give me enough protein, enough fiber, and it's going to be anti-inflammatory. So for me, I think like having a breakfast sorted like that is great. Other options, overnight oats, leftovers from the night before, mm-hmm. hummus with mm-hmm. crudite and a little bit of like tofu or leftover chicken. Mm-hmm. Like feed yourself really well first thing in the morning and it will set you up for the rest of the day. That would be one of my number one tips. The other thing is like, get into batch cooking. Mm-hmm. Our freezer is full of like half Raphael stuff, half stuff for us, because we know like after we fed him and bathed him and put him down, he screamed again and we put him down again. It's like 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. You really don't feel like cooking. Luckily, me and Rochelle are like different in that I can just quickly whip something up in like 50 minutes and I've got the energy to do that. Mm-hmm. But when you're really, really low in the moment and the last thing you want to do is like pull out a pan, just grab something from the freezer, and this is where batch cooking really comes into your own. So there's like a few curries that I love to do. Mm-hmm. One of them is like this yellow dal that I make, which is chickpeas. It's on the app actually for free. Chickpeas, brown lentils, turmeric, coconut milk, tomatoes, some mm-hmm. greens in there, couple of spices. We literally make like a big, so like 8 to 10 serving size of that, and a big saucepan. And then when it's cool, we put it into freezer bags, whack that in the freezer. That sorted us out so many times.
Yeah.
Always have that. And then like just having nuts and seeds and stuff like that in the house to just grab when you're feeling sacks. The other thing that I've realized, which I wanted to do a series on, is one-handed eating.
Yes.
So when you've got like a kid and you just need something to eat one hand, because you can't put him down and like your kitchen might be awake. So one-handed snacks.
I wanted to do one-handed recipes in my book.
Honestly,
but it's really
so
hard
good.
Though, right? It is. Really hard because you can't really do much cooking or like we saw an advert, I think it was yesterday actually, there was I can't even remember what it was for now, but it was like something to do with dads, and it was like a dad who's had his kid on his shoulders and he was cooking dinner, and it was basically saying like, you know, dads get involved, random ad. But I was like, who's cooking with a toddler on their shoulder? I think that's not practical.
No, definitely not.
Honestly, I really wanted to do that. But it kind of dangerous, exactly. But I kind of find that hard because the one-handed thing is hard, right? Unless you've batch cooked and then you're like, grab out the freezer, spread some of this on.
Yeah,
you should do it.
I'm always swinging. So like some of those products, I don't know if I can name them, but you know, the pouches with like puy lentils and chickpeas. Yeah. Those have saved me so many times.
Yeah.
So I have like, you know, like a pre-made tomato sauce that's got like three ingredients in that you can buy. Like I do make meals like using pre-prepared or minimally processed products.
Yeah.
Absolute time
like
saver.
Like the rice, the poi.
Oh, yeah. They're so useful to have.
Yeah.
And that you pay a little bit extra money for them, but like they do save you in moments where you just don't have the energy. So ripping those open, whacking them into the pan.
Yeah.
A little bit of sauce, whack into the pan. Frozen greens. Put those into the pan, lid on, just leave that to cook, bit of seasoning, bit of spices, one-handed, you know, like making sure they're away from the cooker or whatever. Mm. And those definitely help me. And then also we make these like crackers that are with just chia, flax, sun-dried tomatoes, water, and a little bit of oil. You roll them out and then you put them in the oven for around 60 minutes. We have them on the Doctor's Kitchen app as well. Again, we just have those in a little tin because when it's like 11 a.m. and you haven't even had a chance to have your breakfast, which happens, you just need something to eat, and you don't want to be reaching for chocolate, or you don't want to be reaching for, you just want to be have actually have something that's nutrient dense. Rochelle relies on those all the time. So.
Yeah.
But one handed cooking is a thing.
Yeah.
There's
definitely
a cookbook in that.
Definitely. You do it first.
It is tough. It is tough.
It is really tough, honestly. I definitely think there'd be something in it there if you could make it work. But one thing I just want to add before I do the last question is I love the savory breakfast. When I was on your pod, we talked a lot about the savory breakfast. But honestly, I have so many parents who are going through my book and they're like, yeah, but I'm doing breakfast. So how can I give them? I can't give them broccoli at breakfast. And I always try and say, well, your little one has no preconceived idea about what should be offered. So the idea that it needs to be cereal or jam on toast, that's ours, right? That's society that's kind of programmed us for that.
Absolutely.
And I always say they are not going to be saying, oh my gosh, I'm not having hummus. It's breakfast time. 100%. What's your thoughts? Because I know you love 100%. This topic.
Honestly, like there's this really famous article that was written, I think, in the New York Times or one of those papers, where and it was called like What Kids Eat Around the World.
Yeah.
And people should just Google it because the images are just amazing. There are these kids that are lying down and the photographer photograph their typical breakfast meals around them. And they went to all corners of the world, Japan, Korea, India, Sri Lanka, Brazil. And it's just wild how different the UK and US breakfasts
are
compared to like traditional breakfast. And if I think about like the kind of food that we eat whenever I go back to the village in Punjab, it's saag, which is a stewed down greens. Mm-hmm. It's things like paratha. It's, you know, very, very savory foods. There's no like sugary toast, jam, nothing like that. It's all pretty much the same flavor base that you would actually have for lunch or dinner. And so absolutely, like if you're going to give them anything at breakfast, it can be broccoli, it can be oats, it can be hummus, it can be, you know, the porridge with a little bit of jam on top. It does not need to be flavored. They're not going to be like, oh my God. Like just like you said, like, oh, I want my Weetabix. Why are you giving me this? Why are you giving me hummus? I have hummus in the morning. Yeah. I have leftovers all the time.
Because you said you have leftovers for breakfast a lot.
I have leftovers all the time. In fact, this morning, I think I had, I was feta, tomatoes, some spinach, my doctor's kitchen toast, and an egg on top. And that was my breakfast.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Rochelle, because she grew up in Australia, you know, avo, toast, eggs, tomato, like, it's all very, very savory. And I think a savory breakfast is actually a great thing to get your kids to start
to accept.
Liking.
I agree. Yeah. I think it is good. And it's that variety. You know, one of the episodes I'm doing on this podcast is about familiarity and about, I think what a lot of parents don't get is that kids like what they are used to.
Yeah.
So at the very beginning of this podcast, when you were talking about all the foods that you're having and all the foods that you're giving Raf, I was thinking, that is so good, because what you're doing is you're building up a familiarity with all of this variety.
Yeah.
And if you only were offering him 10 foods, that's what would be his norm.
Yeah.
So when you're then a year and a half down the line and you're going, oh, let's try something new.
Yeah.
He'd be like, no, these are my 10. This is what I'm used to.
Yeah.
Whereas if you start off with this huge amount of foods, you know, and every day you're trying something different or a new ingredient and different colors and different breads and, you know, that will be their norm, which means that even if they go through fussy phases, they're still likely to accept a broader variety than if you're only offering them a really limited. And that's what's really come out for me for this entire podcast is what you've said is you offer so much variety.
Yeah.
So Raf will be familiar with so much variety.
Totally.
And he is going to, even, you know, after those fussy phases, accept a wide amount.
Yeah.
So that is what you're setting him up for, basically.
Yeah,
and I
absolutely.
Think it's just such a positive message and tip for others. So
oh, thanks so much.
Love that.
I really want him to be a gourmand, honestly. I just want him to like be able to go into any country in the world and just like try Eat. Loads of different food. Like, you know how Anthony Bourdain would go on like parts unknown, like to the wild corners of the world and just be able to eat anything. Like I think that's just such an amazing ability, this experience. We had Dan Saladino on the podcast. He was part of the food program, and he wrote this amazing book called Eating to Extinction or Foods into Extinction, or something like that. And it's all about how even as adults we have refined our lens of eating to just a handful of ingredients. It's like corn, wheat, and a few others, like less than 10.
Yeah.
And actually, there are thousands of edible plants across the world that we just don't lean into.
Yeah.
And we need to just widen the aperture of our own palates. Yep. And I think this is a really exciting opportunity if you have a child to be able to experience this, not only for them, but also for you as well. Because you know they're going to be getting the benefits, but as an adult, you're going to get those benefits of variety as well, because you're feeding your microbes, which are, you know, the bacteria, fungi, viruses, nematodes that live largely in your large digestive tract, a wide variety of foods, which means they're going to be serving you and doing all their beneficial activities like inflammation lowering, sugar balancing, hormonal control, even better. So yeah, it's a real opportunity, I think, to improve your own diet.
Yeah, I think I know a lot of parents do come to me and say, I've completely changed my eating from following this, from I'm feeding my child and I want them to be healthy, so I completely changed my family's diet.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you, that is the best feedback that's get, is when families say that they've followed this and then gone, we've changed our entire eating.
That's
pattern.
Amazing.
I love it. That's so my best cool. bit of feedback.
That is so, so cool.
But so yeah, lastly, quick fire round after this, but one last question, which is your kind of best piece of advice to any parents, especially dads, who are just about to go into their weaning journey. What would your kind of take home piece of advice be?
I would say just expect to feel that frustration and don't beat yourself up about it. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I did was I felt really guilty that I was getting so annoyed at Raphael because he wasn't eating or wasn't doing a certain thing. And I was trying to, like, you know, I think the weight of my own expectations on him was coming out. And that's like, you know, it's not a really nice feeling, but like it does happen.
Yeah.
And don't beat yourself up about it, because you will learn the art of patience the longer things go along. Yeah. And I don't think I was a particularly patient person because I don't think people realize this, but pre-parenthood, you're pretty selfish. You could just like walk out the door. Yeah. You can just, you know, take something in your bag.
Cinema, shower when you want.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's a real adjustment to actually understand that you can't just do those things anymore willy-nilly. You've got to think about things. So, but there is a little bit of tension at the start. So don't beat yourself up.
Yeah.
Don't feel guilty about it. Patience will come. It's just like practicing over and over again.
Definitely.
So yeah, that's probably one of my tips.
Think there is a big adjustment just generally in parenting, isn't there? If you're like, oh, I can't just do for me.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
When I remember taking my Raph home from the hospital. My Raph. Not yours. And just thinking, oh my gosh, he's going to be with me for like forever. Like this isn't temporary.
Yeah.
He's here forever. And then just thinking, I can't just, you know, go and have a shower or go down the road or go for a walk or go to cinema.
Yeah.
I mean, that obviously does all come back, but there are so many parts of your parenting where you do feel like that.
Totally.
And you almost feel, at some points, you almost feel a little bit resentful. You're like, wow, this has changed my entire life. But obviously, there's so many lovely moments that make up for it. But like you said, don't feel guilty if you feel that or if you're frustrated.
Yeah.
All of those emotions are so normal. I do think we berate ourselves a lot for feeling it.
We do, you know. I remember vividly saying to myself in my mind, like, I liked my life before this.
Yeah, exactly that.
Why did I change it? And then you had to go through the hump. And for different people, it's different amounts of time, I reckon. Because I would say I'm lucky in that I've had this reframing experience. Perhaps my treat helped. But I've got to this point and I'm like, you know, he's going to be turning 8 months. For some other people I know, certainly in my friendship group, it's taken a lot longer than that. Everyone gets there at their own time, but you will get there and that patience will come. And it will just, you know, you'll realize probably after the fact, we're like, oh yeah, I used to think that and now I don't.
Yeah, exactly. And so much changes as well.
A lot changes. But,
honestly, it's been so helpful. And I really think people are going to benefit from this a lot. A lot of what you've said just very naturally will be tips, like without you even meaning them to be
thanks.
Tips. It's like just the little take home grasp. So honestly, it will be really helpful. But before you go, quick fire round.
Okay, yeah. This always makes me nervous.
I know. I never answer quickly. So, I mean.
Yeah, don't. I'm so verbose. I need to actually get better at this. It's probably good
practice.
Okay,
let's get practice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what's Raph's favourite food so far?
Broccoli.
Love it. I used to call Raph broccoli boy because he loved broccoli so much.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your biggest surprise about weaning?
He didn't like raspberries.
Okay, yeah. Shocking.
That's probably the biggest thing. Yeah,
keep trying.
And he's keep trying.
Raspberries are such a good food. There's so much variety in the flavour of them. Like you can get bitter, you can get sweet.
Oh, yeah,
there's so much variety.
Yeah.
So yeah, keep trying. One message that you would give to parents about feeding kids, just one message.
Okay, one message.
So hard.
I would lean into the variety and the excitement of trying new recipes for not only them, but yourself
you
as
too.
Well.
Love yeah, it. Yeah. And last but not least, any kind of funny mealtime rituals Ras had or things that he's kind of demanded or, you know, needed in order for you to guys sit and have an enjoyable meal together?
Okay, let me think. Because we've done a few things. Because we usually do like little sing songs and stuff like yeah. that. He doesn't like the whole aeroplane thing. He doesn't yeah. like, he's like, what are you doing?
Give me the food.
Yeah. Gosh.
It's a really tricky one, especially because he's young, because you're very early into
it. Yeah, we're still quite early into it. But
like, for example, my Raf.
Yeah, go on, yeah.
And I'm sorry I keep calling Raphael Raf, but
we hear so many nicknames. Same. Raphael, Raf Amazing, Rafasaurus. Rafster, that's a good yeah, one.
We call him Raster all the time, Raster. He once, when we were on holiday, and he was obviously a lot older as well, but he had ice cream. Like early, this was, you know, one of his first kind of attempts of ice cream, broccoli floret, scooping it. He used to use it as a little vessel to get the ice cream into his mouth and didn't think anything of it.
Yeah.
And still to this day, he is so happy to have like some lentils and then he'll like lick a bit of cake and then, you know, he doesn't think about it.
I think
so
probably
like
the
that.
Funny thing, I don't know whether I should admit this, but like we're usually very good at cleaning him.
Yeah.
And we'd given him spinach that evening and I cleaned him up and all the rest of it, and I remember I was putting him down for bed after having a milk, he had spinach in his ears still. I was like, I'm such a bad parent. I mean, I did not notice the spinach.
I'm sure
in
that's been
ear.
many people.
Yeah So that was kind of like, oh god, I gotta get better
moment.
At cleaning him.
Oh no, it happens all the time. It's when you like take their nappy off and you're like, how did that get done? Like the worst is like couscous and quinoa. Because it goes everywhere.
And in
the summer, actually, yeah, just coming into summer, we used to feed Raf loads outdoors.
Yes.
Just in a nappy. And then you would literally, there's rice,
everything
quinoa, everywhere. That's another one.
He gets
one
food
to look
stuck
to.
Everywhere. Yeah. Like just, you,
yeah,
you
don't
just don't
blame
know
yourself
how
for
he
the
gets
spinach.
In there.
Anyway, honestly, it sounds like you've loved weaning and you've done such a good job. I'm sure there'll be ups and downs. There will be times where you're like, oh my gosh, he's never going to eat again. Yeah. But there will be. But you guys being foodies and eating together and all the variety, those are the messages I give to people constantly. So you're already doing it.
Thank you so much.
Well done. It's amazing.
I love getting top marks.
Yeah, top marks. 10 out of 10. And thank you for coming on. I'm really, really grateful
you
came.
Thank you. My pleasure.
A huge thank you to Dr. Rupi for being a brilliant guest on my episode today. It was such a great chat and really refreshing and honest about perspective of weaning from a doctor as well as a new dad. Coming up later this week, I'll be sharing 10 steps to successful weaning, which is going to be such a practical episode packed with tips to help you feel much more confident and much more relaxed as you introduce solids to your little one. This podcast is brought to you with support from Little Dish. So a huge thank you to those guys for hosting it for us and having us in their headquarters as well. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do subscribe, share it with a friend or leave a really quick review. It does make such a difference. This episode of How to Feed wouldn't have been possible without my sponsors, Little Dish. Their meals are fresh, delicious, and made with ingredients that you would find in your own kitchen, making them a brilliant option for busy days.